Welcome to We're All Screwed. This podcast discusses topics not suitable for all audiences. If you are sensitive to murder, sexual abuse, paranormal activity, or child victims, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, it's Lacey.
And I'm Anika.
Where's Crystal?
Dot, dot, dot. Did she lose service?
Crystal? I can hear y'all.
Oi! You scared me.
I can hear y'all on my desktop, but y'all can't hear me. Okay. So I'm Crystal. I'm having some technical difficulties today.
Some technical difficulties?
Not lately.
Oh my god. I am obviously slow tonight. That took me a minute.
I have been on one today. All right. Are we ready though?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Okay. So I'm probably not going to do this story justice, but tonight I'm going to tell you about the New Mexico prison riot. This started February 1980, 41 years ago. And when I wrote this, it was in February, and I was like, ooh, it's going to be the 41-year anniversary. 2 months later. But, anyways, it was a frigid night, and a group of inmates in a dormitory at the penitentiary. Wow, I can't talk.
Words are hard.
Today they really are. A group of inmates in a dormitory at the penitentiary of New Mexico, they began drinking a potent homebrew created from fermented raisins and yeast smuggled from the kitchen. And I cannot remember what they call that.
Should we tell them that they make it in the toilet?
That's what I was thinking. What is it called, though? There's like a word for it.
Toilet wine?
Hooch. No.
I think it's hooch.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it is hooch.
What is prison alcohol called? Pruno is prison wine.
No, that's the word I was thinking.
That's funny, though.
But hooch is made from moldy bread and other food items.
Gross.
I don't know how I knew it was called that, but...
there's another word. Maybe it is hooch that I'm thinking of, but... Now I'm wondering, my mom and my uncle made prickly pear margaritas one time because we had went and picked prickly pears for jelly.
Those are the best.
And they all got,
Those are the best margaritas.
Oh my gosh. They, like, the prickly pears fermented and my mom was like, let's just make margaritas out of them.
Hell yeah.
And I'm like, was that considered hooch?
Nah.
Anyways, by 10:30 p.m., the state attorney general at the time, Jeff Bingaman, would later report that they were drunk and angry and talking loudly about taking over the place. The penitentiary was constructed in 1956, but it was in a state of neglect by the early 80s. It had a capacity of about 900, but on the night of the riot, it was teeming with 1,157 men. So, like... 200 more than it should have. Men who had complained for years about the living conditions said they were substandard, violent, and a breeding ground for a riot. Early morning of February 2nd, that's exactly what began happening. The inmates in dormitory E2 faked sleeping as three correction officers made their way through the area to shut down the day room that was across the dorm. They kind of came up behind them, struck them quickly, and they overpowered the guards. This started one of the deadliest episodes in New Mexico history. It was roughly a 36-hour frenzy of brutality and murder that left much of the prison south of Santa Fe in a smoking hulk. When it was over, one of the most violent uprisings in U.S. history would leave these statistics. 33 dead, more injured, and millions of dollars of damage. Amazingly, no guards were killed, but a dozen were held hostage. They were brutally beaten or sodomized. It also left so many more traumatized and scarred by just by what they saw and what they had to go through. In years leading up to the riot, many predicted this disaster because of the state's prison system, particularly at the state pen south of Santa Fe, which was badly overcrowded. Inmate Dwight Duran had filed a lawsuit in 1977 claiming conditions were violated, conditions violated constitutional rights to be free from cruel and unusual punishment. Well, I feel like I have a lot to say about that, but it doesn't pertain to the story. Throughout its history, the penitentiary of New Mexico has suffered from neglect. Bingaman, who later had become a U.S. senator, wrote in his post-uprising report, "The New Mexico prison has always waited at the end of the line for public money." Seems like most of New Mexico is like that. "Elected officials have turned their attention to the ugly problems of the penitentiary only when the institution has erupted in violence and destruction." Again, I feel like that's most of New Mexico. "Lack of space, inadequate programs, and understaffing have all been part of the prison's tradition. The rage these inmates felt had festered from atrocious living conditions. It was the state's only maximum security prison, and it was saddled with overcrowding, corruption, and frequent inmate abuse penetrated by untrained and underpaid correction officers." Finally, the pen just boiled over. You know, it's hard for anybody to live in conditions like that. Then Governor Bruce King would later recall in his book, Cowboy in the Roundhouse. "About 2 in the morning on Saturday, February 2nd, the emergency phone besides my bed in the mansion rang, startling me awake. It was Chief Martin B. Hill of the state police, and my stomach knotted in apprehension. 'Governor, we've lost contact with penitentiary,' he told me. 'When we call over there, we don't get an answer. I thought I'd better alert you. It's possible that we have a serious problem.'" It was more than serious, almost from the start, as violence cascaded from one part of the facility to another. In the first moments of the uprising, inmates looped a belt around the neck of one of the guards they'd taken hostage and began to push and kick him towards the prison's control center, according to Bingaman's report. The guard had been beaten so badly that the guards in the control room didn't even recognize him.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's going to get worse.
I just have to say real quick, I've been talking this whole time and I didn't realize I was muted. I was like, this bitch is just ignoring me.
Like, why aren't they talking to me?
You are pulling me right now. So now I'm curious, what did you have to say?
Whenever you said, God, what was it? I don't know. You had an opinion on that, but you weren't going to say it. And I was like, say it, girl. And then you just kept talking. And I don't know. I was just making comments, which it'll show up on the recording, because even if I'm muted, whatever I say still gets recorded.
It just sounds like you're not listening to her.
Yeah.
I was going to say, but I'm just ignoring you like an asshole. Yeah. Well, okay. So my comment to that was, it's kind of ironic to me that a prison inmate's like, oh, my life is rough. And I'm like, well, what did you do to get yourself there?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that this is a situation. I think our prison system has become very soft, and maybe I just have never been to prison. That's possible. And I'm just talking out my ass. That's also possible. But, I mean, a lot of these guys get free education and free healthcare and free food. May not be the best food, but they get free food. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's interesting for me for them to be like, my life is really hard.
Right.
It can't be too hard. I mean, they don't have to work.
Right. I'm telling you, free food, a free bed to sleep in. Well, they all have the work. Sex you can want, I'm sure.
They don't have to, though.
Well, I thought you did. Oh, I thought you had to work.
Maybe, you can just hang out and do nothing.
So is the job thing like optional? Like if you want to work and get extra money for your ramen noodles?
I think it is, honestly. I mean,
I actually have no idea how it works.
I mean, I know like
I have plenty of family members I could ask real quick.
Hey, Uncle Todd Bob.
Let me just contact my father. It's funny, but also sad.
Hey, mine's my ex-husband, so.
Oh, God.
Dang, we are a group, aren't we? Okay. Anyways, they soon had another problem. Prisoners began attacking an observation window, eventually shattering it with the fire extinguisher. The break in the control room was accomplished in 3 to 5 minutes. That's it. Within 22 minutes, the inmates had completely taken over the entire institution. Like, that's how quickly it went through.
That's insane.
Yeah, and I believe it. when I went through active shooter training, our entire drill lasted 7 minutes. You would think it's some big mass. Like, I think even like the police raid part of it was like the totaled 11 minutes of everything from start to finish. It's ridiculous. It feels a lot longer when you're in there.
That just makes you realize how quickly things can turn south.
Yes.
I mean, absolutely. especially with, and I know this isn't really related, but with all of the things that have been going, I mean, the shootings that have been going on with police, and you see the body cam videos, and to me, it's so fast.
Like, so it happens
so fast, but to hear it, they took over a whole prison and that amount, so, such a small amount of town, they took it over in town, in such a small amount of time, it really just shows that it can happen
quick. It makes me think like a leaky dam, you know. Yeah. It's like it just takes a little tiny hole and then boom.
Yeah.
It's all gone. Yeah, it's ridiculous. So soon hundreds of convicted felons, which I'm imagining this, and this is like this is straight from a horror movie. Soon hundreds of convicted felons were rampaging through the facility. They were smashing sinks, toilets, radiators. They were setting fire to furnishings and to the files in the room and the offices, I guess. As anarchy descended upon the facility, frightened prisoners banded together based on race, proximity, and previous alliances. Hang on a second. Let me stop my dog. I swear he's a mute. And as soon as I start recording, he wants in on it. Okay, so frightened prisoners banded together based on race, proximity, and previous alliances. Gangs of inmates brandishing metal pipes, chair legs, and other makeshift weapons. Many of them were wearing gas masks or bandanas to hide their faces and to protect them from the smoke. They prowled the main corridor, ankle deep in a slurry of water, sewer, paper, and blood. They invaded the administrator offices, dumping cabinets full of official records into the middle of the room and setting fire to them. They set fire to punching bags and some say even some bodies in the prison gym. Caused the wood floor. But why?
Why punching bags?
I wondered that too. I thought that was so random. Punching bags, people, they were just going crazy.
I wonder if it does it say if it was people like guards or other inmates? Or does it not?
It just says some bodies.
Okay.
Just bodies. Yeah. I do want to say that probably, I think it was mostly other prisoners because they kept the guards from what I understand and what I remember. And I say remember as if I was born then. I was not. But from what I remember, the guards, they pretty much kept them separate and they like beat the shit out of them separately. None of them died. I think two died later on after, but it was like separate incidents. And this was after the riot, but some reason they're still kind of affiliated with this.
Uh-huh.
Them setting fire to all this stuff caused the wood floor to catch fire in the gym. It created an inferno so hot that the metal beams supporting the roof began to sag. They stole knives and food from the prison's kitchen. And they ransacked the prison pharmacy. In minutes, author G. Herleman wrote in her book, The Hate Factory, the inmates had themselves a candy store of every kind of downer you could think of. There were also hypodermic needles and syringes for those who liked a more potent hit. Chillingly, the men who started the uprising formed informal death squads with their comrades in cell block 3. Who were, like them, some of the most dangerous men in the institution. And they set about settling scores with alleged snitches and child molesters housed in protective custody. So that's where they went for it. They were like, you guys are done.
Mm-hmm.
The men murdered in this part of the prison. The men murdered in this part of the prison were brutally tortured and mutilated. In this, and I guess I'm going to kind of switch this up from what I'm writing. But during this, there is actually a black smoky stain in the prison today. It's still there today, where this inmate had his eyeballs gouged out, and then he was burned to death with a welding torch.
What the fuck?
Yeah, yeah. And I want to say that this guy was one of the snitches, if I remember right. And I don't even go into detail in the story of what all happened, because it's just extremely gruesome. The facility was closed in 1998. It is now used as a movie set and a tourist attraction. Guides on recent tours of the facility point out the hack marks in the concrete floor where one man was beheaded. No photos are allowed to be taken of this spot. And then, of course, the smoky black stain that I just stated of the guy who was burned with a welding torch. Can you imagine how slow of a painful death that would be?
No, I don't want to.
Oh, it's...
That heat is so high on it, too.
And yeah, and my thing is, it's like, it's so, you know, it's little. Like, it's a little amount.
I wonder if he was even conscious, though, because you said they gouged his eyes out first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. But
I wonder if he was even conscious.
Maybe not. He may have already been pretty much done for.
Which, well, I mean, is still fucking awful, but at least maybe a little bit of a... maybe he Mercy? Didn't suffer, I guess.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe he was passed out and couldn't feel the initial... Ugh, I don't know. It just... Ugh.
Yeah.
After they got started burning him with the welding torch, he would pass out anyways.
Yeah. I mean, either way, I just think the shock would be too much. I mean, to be honest, I'd probably be passed out at the entire uprising to begin with.
Like, what are these people doing?
I'm done. Goodbye. No, in all reality, I'd like to think that I'd probably join the forces and, like, pretend to be, like, I wouldn't do the writing. I'd just kind of go along with them and be like, yeah, let's fuck this place up.
You don't want to get burned.
Fuck you and fuck
you. Like, oh, no, I don't want to have part of the killing. I just want to be a part of the riot.
I ain't no snitch.
It really makes you think, too, though. Or it made me think of, like, where would I be in the prison system? Like, if I was in prison...
People would be so scared of us.
No, well, okay, I imagine it being a lot like high school.
Oh my god.
And I know it's not, but I'm like imagining, like, I was so cool with everybody in high school, like everybody. I was cool with everybody. So I'm like, maybe I'd just be cool with everybody.
it's gotta be in some way, because you have your cliques.
Yeah. That's really, I mean, it's just a more,
I'll probably severe. Get, beat up in the bathroom there too.
Right? Right? I mean, it's all dangerous. Both places are dangerous.
Yeah, high school.
One's full of
teenage girls.
I was like, one place is like full of like hormonal teenagers, and one place is full of either like estrogen filled or testosterone filled. Like, just too much, too little space. None of it is good.
Crazy people.
So, less than an hour after taking control of the prison, inmates commandeered guards' radios, and they made their first demands to authorities. They pushed for a meeting with Governor King and Felix Rodriguez, who was the Deputy Corrections Secretary. That's a lot to say.
Yeah.
Through the next day, negotiations took place as city, county, and state police officers, plus the Army National Guard troops housed nearby, surrounded the perimeter. Helicopters buzzed overhead and smoke billowed from the gym. As talks continued, officers, some outfitted in riot gear and armed with M16 rifles, awaited orders as officials negotiated with a revolving cast of self-appointed inmate representatives. The inmates' demands were pretty straightforward. And in my head, I'm like, you know what? That's probably not a lot to ask for. Like, it's pretty minimal for what they could have asked for. Mm-hmm. Here's what their demands were. They wanted federal officials brought to the prison to ensure no inmates would be retaliated against in the aftermath. They wanted prisoners reclassified, so first-timers with short sentences were no longer housed side-by-side with violent lifers. They wanted to end the overcrowding and harassment by guards. They wanted better food, better educational and recreational facilities, and a new disciplinary committee. That's where I'm like, all right, guys. All right. You're in prison.
Wait, so run that by me again?
Mm-hmm. All of it?
They were trying to start a disciplinary committee?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they wanted better educational and recreational facilities in prison.
Okay.
The first part I totally get. Like, yes, in the overcrowding, that's fair. In the harassment. And, I mean, sure, every prison could probably have better food. I mean, again, high school all over again, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? You fucking took that choice away from yourself.
Yes. Okay, yes. I totally agree.
If you want a steak, don't go to prison.
Yeah. You want to have a good education? Well, to be fair, it's free in prison, so all right.
Yeah.
You want recreational facilities? Again, don't go to prison. I mean, I feel like that's a little much. I mean, the rest of it, I'm like, all right, that's pretty fair, you know?
Right.
That's pretty fair. But when you're asking for a better life in prison, a better, more comfortable life in prison, it's like, should have thought about that before you went to prison.
Well,
I mean.
And not only that, but, I mean, asking for it is one thing, but starting a riot over it is fucking stupid.
Yeah, but I do think that the riot was more of the living situation of the overcrowding and the abuse that they were receiving from the guards, you know, is what I think boiled it down. But I think there was more like, well, while we're here.
And it could have been one of those situations where things just kind of got out of hand.
No.
You know what I mean is like someone started the riots and then someone joins in and then someone else joins in.
No, it was a group of guys that they were like, no, this is what we're going to do.
Like even all the murdering and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, let me get better crap and go and kill some guards and some inmates to try to get some better stuff.
Well, okay, think about it. How do we get stuff done? We have to go to extremes. I'm not saying it's right. It definitely isn't. But I mean, if you want something done, you have to go to some sort of extreme to gain the attention of the people who you need to get, you know.
But I feel that murder is too extreme.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Absolutely. But I mean, you have psychopaths running around free.
True.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. But no, I definitely don't think it was one of those that it's like, it just kind of escalated. Like, we just wanted to do a little riot. You know, you see prison riot on TV. I don't know. Again, I don't know anything about prison. But, you know, it's like a little fight, and then it's broken up, and you're good. Whatever. But, no, these guys set out with a purpose. Absolutely with a purpose. And they didn't give a fuck who got in the way. Hour after hour, no progress was made. And released hostages and inmates who were able to flee the prison provided officials with firsthand accounts of the massacre unfolding inside. Knowledge of inmates being killed did not change the negotiation process, Binghamman later wrote. The official strategy continued to stall for time, and they tried to talk to the convicts into releasing hostages. Although corrections officials knew that some of the guards were being beaten, stabbed, and sodomized, they clung to the hope that negotiations could be that they could at least save the hostages' lives. So they kind of were at the point they were like, sorry, guys, we're just going to save who we can.
That seems fair.
I mean, I think it's good for them that they weren't like, okay, you're prisoners. Sorry, your life doesn't matter. You know, they were kind of like, all right, we're going to save who we can.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about that right now.
It's hard. It's complicated because, again, you're in prison for your choices.
Yeah.
But it's also like, okay, but I mean, some guy was burned to death with a welding torch. I mean, I don't know if anyone deserves that.
No, and it's not, I don't know. There's no justification for it, I guess.
No, there's not. What they did was pretty senseless.
Yeah, I mean, I get, you know, making your voice heard and even protesting, whatever. I get it, but it's just like what you see in the streets to loot and riot and all that bullshit. It's just not necessary because at that point, all you're doing is you're making your cause less important because all people are seeing is you being a criminal.
Yeah, I was going to say your cause is now becoming a problem.
Yeah, and it's no longer a cause when things are getting lit on fire or the Capitol is being stormed or businesses are being broken into. It's no longer a protest, it's a riot, and your cause no longer matters.
It's an issue. It's becoming an issue, not a cause, and you're ruining people's lives.
Yeah.
Just to get your point across.
Yeah. I mean, people in your own community or your own, in this case, you're at this point, the prison is your home. You're destroying your home. Living
facilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're destroying your own safety. Yeah. It's really sad when people feel they need to go to that extent, torture and murder.
Yeah.
To get their voice heard.
Yeah.
On New Mexico 14, near the entrance to the prison, family members and local and national print and television reporters kept, okay, I spelled vigil, but it's supposed to be vigil. They kept vigil.
Oh my God.
There's my Spanglish kicking in. television reporters kept vigil as temperatures plummeted to below freezing at night. By most accounts, only a few dozen inmates participated in the death squads. That's still a lot to me. A few dozen, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's really a lot.
Well, I mean, I guess compared to 1,100.
Is that how many? 1,100 was how many they was injured?
No, 1,100 people, or there were total of 1,100 inmates. That's how many were housed. And
it's really limit, not that many.
The limit of the building was 900.
That makes sense then. But it's still not that many people.
Yeah. No, it's not a lot of people. So on most accounts, only a few dozen inmates participated in the death squads. Many others hid or barricaded themselves away from the mobs of violent men roaming in the prison. That would probably be me.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Hundreds found ways to flee. It was the slow hemorrhaging of prisoners and the trickling release of hostages over 2 days that ultimately brought the uprising down. So it wasn't even a negotiation. It was just like people just kind of escaped and there was nobody else to kill.
It kind of just like tapers out and just kind of stops.
Yeah, it's like a match. It's like, psh, psh. That's it. By the time the prisoners got a requested meeting with the media, at noon on February 3rd, an estimated 800 inmates had surrendered inside the perimeter fence, where they would spend the next few days huddled under blankets as the penitentiary lay in ruins. The news conference was anticlimactic, wary inmate negotiators who initially demanded sweeping reforms and the resignation of despised correction officials narrowed their demands to post riot protection for inmates, no more harassment from guards, and out-of-state transfers for negotiators. So this is what it came down to. Like, at the end of it, they said, okay, we want riot protection for the inmates. Fair enough. No more harassment from guards. Also fair enough. And they wanted the people who were negotiating and basically started it, they wanted them to be able to transfer out of state. So, because obviously there was only one place in New Mexico they could go.
Okay, I'm probably going to sound stupid, but why do the inmates need riot gear?
Not riot gear, protection, like, so they wouldn't be retaliated against. Like, you think about it, okay, so let's say me and you are barricaded and scared to death, trying to stay alive from Crystal, right? Crystal's rioting and killing people, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the end of it, Crystal's like, okay, I'm done. Like, I'm out of energy. There's nothing more to kill, right? There's nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end of it, Crystal's still in the same prison as me and you. And Crystal just ruined our lives.
Right.
So if we wanted to, we could retaliate against her. You know what I mean? And we could harm her and beat her up and all this stuff. So they wanted protection from that. Probably, they probably went into isolation, I'm sure.
See, and that's one that I'm like, that's one that, you know what, you made your bed, you lie in it.
Oh yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. If you didn't want your fellow inmates to hate you, you probably shouldn't be trying to kill them.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how to feel about the out-of-state transfer is kind of the same thing, I think. They wanted to be, they didn't even want to be around the situation. They were like, all right, I'm done. I'm just going to go start a new life in another state because there's no other place in New Mexico to be transferred to. Hmm. But so they narrowed it down to those three things. By mid-afternoon on February 3rd, the prison had been retaken. The riot was like a fast-moving tornado, was over, but the mess was obviously something people had to deal with. David Friedman, one of the original attorneys in the Duran litigation, said he and his colleague, the late Charles Daniels, not the country singer. When I read that, I was like, what? So, sorry. That's my nerd coming out. Anyways, he later became a Supreme Court justice. He went to the penitentiary to offer help. When they were finally allowed in, the facility was a smoking husk, and they began writing instructions on legal pads on, you know, to order food, water, medical care, and new mattresses. The prisoners were, or I guess the prison officials, you know, the guards and people running the prison, mm-hmm. They were paralyzed. They were scared to death. They were scared of the anger and the rage, which, I mean, think about how quickly it took over. I'd be scared to death, too. I absolutely don't blame them.
Yeah.
The state brought criminal charges against the inmates involved in the uprising, but out of nearly 50 indictments, most resulted in plea bargains. Many of these added little or no jail time to the offenders' existing sentences. 17 of the 33 homicides were not prosecuted at all. Roger Morris wrote in his 1983 book, The Devil's Butcher Shop, which I put in parentheses, need to read. I just want you to know I cannot find this book anywhere. It does exist, but it's like $30, $30 to $40 for softback, like nothing special. So it's super hard to find.
Hmm. Interesting.
But I want to read it. I want to read it so bad. It's supposed to be a really, really good, but very gruesome book. The prosecutors obtained jury verdicts in only 2 of the remaining 16 murder cases. So really 2 out of 33. That's it. 3 years after the carnage, the conclusion seemed inescapable. In stark terms of proof of punishment, many, if not most of the men who rampaged, raped, tortured, murdered, and mutilated at the Santa Fe riot, they got away with it, Morris wrote. I mean, they did. They got away with it. I mean, I don't even know what to say.
I really don't either.
It kind of sucks. I mean, I feel very torn. I'm very torn on it because I'm like, okay, they pretty much were like, meh, fuck those 33 people. They were already in prison. It's fine. Whatever. Right, their right. lives don't matter. And again, like we've discussed, like, okay, they were in prison. They chose that life, but they also did not necessarily choose to be tortured and murdered.
Well, no, and prison, it's not.
But they're still people.
Exactly. They are people. It's a life. And I think about it and I'm very much like, well, they not deserve it, but that, you know, like they're in prison. What do they expect? You know, but I'm also thinking, okay, some of those people were probably nonviolent offenders. They probably were just trying to do their time and be mm-hmm. done. You know what yeah. I mean? And to the prison system, to the state of New Mexico, really, they didn't matter. Like these people didn't matter, which is sad. It's sad.
It is. And I feel like they, which, I mean, I don't even know what you would do, put them in prison. I mean, they're already in prison, but.
And that's my thought, too. Like, what else could you do?
I don't know. I don't know.
So what they typically do in that kind of situation is, because it happened recently in my ex's prison, his old cellmate had his face cut off by another cellmate. And. Like, he had 50 stitches on his face.
Only 50? That's not that
well,
much.
Yeah, they cut from his chin up to his ear and then cut off part of his ear.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was imagining, like, his whole face carved off.
But what they do is the person who did that, They pull them out and they put them in solitaire. And then after they do that, so inside the prison system, like New Mexico was talking about, they have their own little justice system. They have to go to a court. They have to plead their case and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But when a crime is that severe, what they do is they call it real world charges. So they go and charge them like they would on the outside.
As if they were like a first time offender or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Like it's an actual offense. Like this guy that did this, mm-hmm. he's going to get the rest of his life in prison.
Mm-hmm. So it's basic. I mean, it makes sense. It's basically a whole new thing.
But
it's
a whole new. But if he would have done something less severe and would have been, he would have went through the prison's justice system, which they take away commissary. They take away phone calls. They take away writing letters. They take away, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, I think the people who started this, and especially the people in the death squads, in my opinion, they probably should have got a death sentence.
But see, they might have already, and that's the reason why they weren't charged for something.
That's, you know what, that's very possible. And that may have also been why they were like, fuck it, nothing to lose.
I mean, that's, I could see that. And then them not being charged mm-hmm. for another violent crime due to the fact that they already have a life sentence, so what's the point in charging them for another life sentence?
Yeah, they're already charged to the fullest extent of the law.
Well, but I could see them doing that because if they don't charge them for those offense, those, what was it, you said 11 people that didn't even get knowledge that they were murdered for this?
17
people. They don't have mm-hmm. any sort of justification for their family.
No.
I mean, hey, my brother went to prison for this, and this. Hey, he got murdered. His life didn't mean anything to anyone, so the person who murdered them didn't even get charged for it, even though they already had a life sentence. That's what I feel.
Yeah. I kind of agree with you. And it's kind of like, okay, so my brother went in, he had 5 years for embezzlement or, you know, something like that, something little. But embezzlement's not little, but you know what I mean, say. Something not...
What did he? I was like, wait. I mean, he can embezzle like $10. That might not be anything.
Right. But you know what I mean? Like a nonviolent, like, okay, you have 5 years. Just do your time, get out. You're fine. And now his life's over and nobody cares.
Mm-hmm. Or let's talk real talk. Hey, I had a personal amount of marijuana on my system and I got 5 years prison sentence.
Exactly. Yeah. For possession.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's sad. Because, I mean, it makes it more sad because it's not like, oh, this violent murderer was murdered. Like, oh, cool. Good job ridding the world of evil. You know, it's we don't know. We don't know who. And I mean, there's a list, and I'm sure we could
go and look.
We could look it up. And
I feel like that.
There's 33 of them. That's a lot.
That's heartbreaking, though, because, you know, those are still people. Yeah. I mean, that's someone's brother or cousin or uncle or dad, mm-hmm. husband. You know what I mean? That there's still someone. They might not be the mm-hmm. greatest people and might have, I mean, royally made fucked up their choices. Lives, but.
Yeah, yeah. It's I'm very conflicted because I'm like, well, you were in prison. You made bad choices. Doesn't mean you necessarily deserve to die.
Correct. I agree with that completely.
Okay, so.
Hold on.
Legislators. Lacey, go ahead.
Lacey, are you here? Did you mute?
I am.
Did you mute yourself again?
No, I didn't.
Are you just listening to us?
I am.
Legislators appropriated more than $100 million to clean up the mess and build new prisons. Officials began a years-long process of implementing reforms, in a large part because they were forced to do so by a federal consent decree, but based on Dwight Durant's legal actions before the riot occurred. So the guy at the beginning who already had a case. It was already in process, right? A total of 68 claims were filed in an effort to recover damages for the deaths and inquiry of inmate, or I'm sorry, deaths and injury of inmates. Of the 124 inmates for whom compensation was sought, 47 cases were settled and 77 were dismissed for various reasons. But Bingaman wrote in his report, not everything that was destroyed could be fixed. Completely. It's not wrong. The penitentiary can be repaired, and even a bureaucracy can be repaired, Bingaman wrote. But the men who, day by day, for year after year, have to look over their shoulder, for the man with the knife who lack enough opportunity to make decisions in their daily lives that they forget how to decide, these men, they cannot be repaired. They are forever broken by a system designed to correct them. And I have very mixed feelings on that last sentence.
Okay, explain.
Well, I don't even know. And in my head, and maybe it's more like, I think we've lost sight. We've lost sight of how we're supposed to correct people who are in the prison system. Instead of trying to rehabilitate them, which is what prison is supposed to be for, if I'm not mistaken, They are catering to them and they're making their lives as easy as possible, which I'm not saying that they should be miserable and I'm not saying they should be uncomfortable necessarily, but, and maybe I'm just jealous, but in my head, I'm like, okay, I don't get free education. I don't get free education and I am contributing member to society. I obey the law for the most part. You know, I work, you know, I do what I'm supposed to do as an adult, I guess, for the most part. But someone can break the law. They can ruin other people's lives. They can hurt people. They can, essentially, not very many crimes is there not a victim of some sort. Maybe not to the extreme, but, you know, you steal something from somebody, you're hurting them. You give somebody drugs, you're hurting them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You can do these things and get a free college degree. And that's really hard for me to be okay with.
Yeah, I get that.
It's really hard for me to be like, okay, I'm paying rent. I'm buying my own food. I'm going to work every day. And I have to pay for my health care and I have to pay for my college education.
Yeah.
That sucks. I work really hard for what I've got.
Right.
And, you know, so it's very hard for me to, I think we've lost sight as a society in whole, not just in the prison system. We've lost sight of
a lot of things.
Oh, so many things. I'm just going to be like, if I keep going, I'm going to go off into a rabbit hole, whole nother rabbit hole. But yeah, I think we've lost sight on what rehabilitating or correcting people is.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
And at this time, this is, of course, like the 80s. I can't even imagine what it was like to live in the 80s to begin with. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, I have no idea.
But you know what I mean? It probably was pretty bad for them. I'm not going to deny that. And this instance probably broke a lot of people. And I can't even imagine if there were suicides afterwards. And, you know, the aftermath of it was probably detrimental, I'm sure.
Well, not only that, but they were short-staffed before. Who's going to want to work there now?
Right, yeah. So how are they supposed to get these people in and get them trained properly as one of the negotiations? How are they supposed to get them in, get them trained, when nobody wants to come to work for them? I mean, yeah, it's interesting. But anyways.
You know, it's... It's bad. I've seen, of course, you're on the drive. I've seen that you had this on your list, but I didn't look into it because I knew you were going to tell it. And I had never even heard of it before. Like, I didn't even know that that happened.
The New Mexico prison riot?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's...
Anika, was this a state facility or a federal facility in New Mexico? Do you know?
It was a state.
A state?
It was a state. It was the only state penitentiary in New Mexico.
I don't know. I drove through New Mexico recently and I can believe that.
Yeah. Okay, so after its closure in 1998, Old Main wasn't leveled. Like, the building is still standing. It became a movie set for a variety of films, including the remake of The Longest Yard, which has Adam Sandler and isn't Nelly in there? There's a lot of pretty big names. Anyways.
I have no idea.
No, I'm going to look because there's another one I can't think of. It was made in 2005. It's a really funny and also really sad movie. Okay, so it has Adam Sandler, Chris Rock, Nelly. Oh, okay, so it also has Terry Crews, who is like that big black guy and like the White Chicks.
Okay, yep.
Oh, the...
Nelly was in that?
Yes. Yeah, Nelly's in there. Stone Cold Steve Austin's in there.
Yeah, he was one of the guards, wasn't he?
Was he? I don't... You know, it's been so long since I watched it.
Me too. I feel like Stone Cold was one of the guards, but I could be wrong.
What's the name of the movie again?
The Longest Yard. Honestly, I watched it one time because it made me cry, and I haven't watched it since.
See, and I've watched it a million times, and the only two things that I can really remember are the guy that dresses up like a cheerleader, like the real out there one.
Yes.
And at the end, when he's going for the ball, and I think he's trying to escape.
I don't know. It makes me cry because if I'm not mistaken, the guy that plays Chris Rock dies, and it made me sad, and I cried, and I was like, "Fuck this! I'm never watching this again."
I remember this movie.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, to be honest, if a movie makes me cry, I probably will not watch it ever again. I'm just letting you guys know. So anyways, yeah. So the remake of The Longest Yard was actually filmed there.
Interesting.
Yeah. I feel like I did know that, but I forgot. To commemorate New Mexico's centennial, the corrections department began offering free tours. The tours became popular. They became so popular, they were able to start charging for them. On the first week of the month between May and October, tourists can pay $15 for the Respect Our Past to Create a Better Future guided tour of the drafty, dank old facility that has seen so much. Visitors can view glass cases full of shanks and other primitive weapons confiscated from the inmates. They can pass through the riot gates some say could have prevented the uprising had they been used. And they even stand where it all began in dormitory E2. A visitor can walk cell block 4, where more than a dozen inmates lost their lives, and hand-drawn calendars and gang signs still are on the walls. No pictures are allowed in that part of the facility. I did not put this in there, but I also, if I remember right, a episode of The Dead Files was also filmed here. Amy Allen came in and talked to the ghosts of the riot. It was a pretty cool episode. Yeah, I'm gonna have to go back and watch it again because yeah, it was good.
I'm gonna have to look that up because I want to see that.
Okay, if I find it, I'll send it to you guys because it's I remember it being, of course, me being like New Mexico, fascinated.
Right.
It's creepy. Apparently, it's a really creepy place. And I would say that we could do a ghost tour there, but it's almost like doing a ghost tour in Alcatraz, kind of. Like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, that's big time. That's scary. But, so, anyways, I didn't write that in there, but yeah, there's an episode of The Dead Files on there, and I'll have to find it. Portions of the facility were destroyed, obviously. The gym was burned. Repairs cost more than $10 million. The cleanup effort and costs were staggering as legislators scrambled to approve a $38 million emergency appropriation. And during this time, hundreds of prisoners were shipped out of state. And I'm going to end it with, it's part of New Mexico's history, Vincent V. Hill, a corrections official, said, as he gave a reporter a tour of the facility in November. It's not the best part of New Mexico history. We've got to preserve and we've got to learn from it. Totally agree. It is definitely, one, it's something to, I would hope, fear people into acting right. And because I always forget, I'm going to go ahead and say that I got this from the SantaFeNewMexican.com. The author was Phaedra Haywood. And I also got information from the LCSunNews.com. So, yeah.
That would be really cool to do a tour of, though, I think.
Oh, yeah, I would love, to go.
Just to be able to feel that vibe, though, like...
I feel like I'm getting anxiety even just thinking about seeing and feeling the vibe of where all those inmates were murdered, and especially, like, where that guy was burned to death. Like, I feel like I can already just feel the vibes thinking about it.
That's definitely something, yeah. I mean, I definitely want to do that one day, but I don't know.
Okay, I'm the worst person in the world.
I feel like...
I'd like to see where he was burnt at and, like, stand and compare. That is so horrible. Please forgive me. And if his family happens to listen or distant cousins or something, I'm sorry.
First of all, if any of his family members listen to this, talk to us. Tell us your side. I would like to know. Like, let's do an interview. I don't think that's weird, Crystal. For me, I feel like I'd really have to be emotionally prepared, though. Like, I'd really have to be loaded up on Xanax or something.
Yeah, it's definitely not weird. I mean, just to be able to, in a way, relive what they went through.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's normal to be fascinated with, like, holy crap, something awful happened right here where I'm standing.
It still makes me feel bad.
It's human nature to be curious.
But also, I mean, I've always had a kind of a fascination in, like, blast shadows is the best way for me to describe it. Like, the shadows from when someone burns against a wall or a bomb goes off.
Mm-hmm.
It's always fascinating.
Ooh, that gives me goosebumps.
But it's amazing what the body does. It's the main to me. Mm-hmm. Like, our bodies are stout, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, it is very interesting. I agree. But, ooh, it gives me goosebumps.
I remember reading it or watching a show on a crime that had that involved. But honestly, the more I think about it, I think it was like SVU or something.
Not even a real show.
It wasn't even a real show.
You know what? I actually feel like it was probably Bones, because I feel like I know. Okay, when you started talking about this.
Yes, it was Bones. That's what it was. I love Bones, though.
When you start talking about it, that is exactly what popped into my head. Was it one particular episode in Bones?
That's what it was. And it's like two or three, like side by side.
Oh, something. Yeah, it's something. But that's yeah. Funny. It's funny that I could actually pinpoint, like, that sounds like Bones.
Well, I mean, I can't say much. I have, like, every one of her show, or I have all the seasons to the last three or four, but I stopped watching, so.
I actually just started rewatching Bones.
I love that.
I love it, too. Ugh, Bones is life. I strive to be more like her every day.
Her personality. Oh, my God.
It's actually not true. You know who my celebrity, like, not celebrity, like, I guess TV character I strive to be, who I'd want to be? There's actually two, now that I think about it. Can you guys guess who?
No.
I don't think so. I'm trying to think.
When I say it, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, for sure. So I'd really love to be like Abby from NCIS.
I can see that one.
Or like Garcia from Criminal Minds.
Huh.
Thinking about putting it together.
I can see you being Garcia, but I don't think I can see you being Abby.
What? It's more like I want to be Abby. Okay. I want to be her. Like, I would, when I was in school, in high school, I wanted to do her job. Like, that's what I wanted to be. I really wanted to be a forensic serologist, which basically specializes in bodily fluids. And then I realized how grossed out I am by bodily fluids and decided to take a different route.
Well, let me reevaluate my life choices.
So instead I went into business school.
That's pretty gruesome too.
It can be, for sure. Oh, me and my coworker decided that we are, our job, we are in medical investigators. medical billing investigators is what we do. So I'm like, all right, I guess it's kind of like forensics. Kind of. Anyways, do we have any crime of the week or?
I do.
Woohoo. I hope it's not the one you told me earlier. That was terrible.
Not it's funny. Not. It's not.
Do we have any listeners in Oklahoma?
Don't think so.
Well, if we do, I hope y'all are okay. They had a tornado touchdown.
No, they're used to that.
Surprise!
My mom and stepdad were just in Oklahoma City like 2 days ago, like this past weekend.
Let me see.
Like, they came back.
We have Monday. Zero Oklahoma listeners.
Surprise!
No.
Unless they're down at the bottom and I haven't gotten to them yet. Nope, not one. Anywho. Okay, so the first one I am reading is in Sydney. So it's off of Nine News and out of Sydney. It's titled Privacy Expert Charged with Child Sexual Assault Offenses After Global Manhunt. And I thought this one was interesting because it's like been a long time coming for this guy, and this article is dated April 24th, so a few days ago. An accused child molester will virtually front a Sydney court today after a global manhunt over allegations dating back to the early 1980s. Privacy expert Simon Gordon Davies was extradited to Australia from the Netherlands on Friday night after a decade-long investigation that culminated in the issuing of an Interpol red notice, a global appeal for help, and a police flight to Europe in the middle of a pandemic. Police said the Child Abuse and Sex Crimes Squad received a referral in December of 2010 detailing allegations of historic child sex offenses between 1981 and 1983. A warrant was issued for Mr. Davies' arrest in September of 2016, followed by an Interpol red notice, an alert to law enforcement agencies worldwide, in December of 2017, so a year later. That was followed by a global appeal for information in December 2019, at which point Strike Force Boyd detectives thought Dr. Davies was living in the United Kingdom or Europe. According to the police, Mr. Davies handed himself into a police station in the major Dutch port city of Rotterdam, where he was arrested. What followed was an extensive effort to arrange his extradition to Australia before he was eventually surrendered to NSW police on Thursday at Schiphol, and I probably just butchered that, I apologize, airport in Amsterdam, and charged with numerous child sexual and indecent assault charges offenses that allegedly occurred across Sydney between 1981 and 1987.
Dang.
So they spent like, 10 years investigating and then another two trying to actually get him back to Australia, and they finally did it.
That is crazy.
Which I don't know.
Awesome, though, that they...
Yeah, and I don't know the laws in Australia, of course, because I'm not there, but it makes me wonder, because I know here the statute of limitations probably would have already ran out and he would just go free.
Well, to be fair, if it was New Mexico, they would have just been like, nah, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Oh, yeah. Lord. They're not New Mexico anymore. It's fine.
Very true.
This isn't really a huge story or anything, but it is one that I actually sent to Lacey earlier because I'm always sending her my links to the news.
Hang on. Sorry, I wanted to look this up. So here it would be 7 years of the last act. So if they would have figured it out 10 years later, there would have been nothing they could do here.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Wow. That is insane.
So, anyways, sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, you're good. I was interrupting your story. Somebody got jailed, got put in jail today because of last year they coughed on a baby. They pulled down a baby's mask and coughed on them.
That's just a dickhead move.
Yeah. I'm like, and it said because they didn't like how close the mother was. So why not cough on the mother?
That makes zero sense.
I'd be like, cough on the mom. They deserve it, probably. Not the baby.
Oh, my God. I can't, people. So,
this story, I think it's pretty amazing. It's sad, but it's pretty amazing how brave, I guess, and the help from the people involved. This lady, this doesn't have a date on it. Anyways, so this lady had endured a night of abuse. Where her boyfriend was strangling her. He used a pillowcase to suffocate her, a t-shirt to suffocate her. And it was basically just an all-night domestic altercation where he just beat her all night and it seems like tried to kill her multiple times. That morning, she got brave because this guy took away her cell phone, so she had no way to contact anybody. But she wrote a note to her children's bus driver. So when they got on the school bus, the kids saw this. They watched the entire thing. The kids handed the bus driver a note and she called the cops and essentially rescued this lady.
Which is so brave, because in that situation, that's a hard move to make.
Oh, I can just imagine her fear of like, oh, fuck, I hope he doesn't see this.
Yeah.
When they found the woman in the house, she was found with cuts, bruises, all kinds of abrasions. She was beat to hell. The boyfriend was charged with 3 felony counts of aggravated battery and a misdemeanor, charges of battery and deprivation of property.
He should have been charged with attempted murder.
Attempted murder? Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. I mean, he's probably going to be out tomorrow for that.
That's ridiculous.
And on probation. Yeah. I hope that that girl got the hell out of there, and I hope that guy never finds her or her kids. But, I mean, I just got to say, like, she found a way. Like, good for her.
That pisses me off, though, because that is not even close to what he should have been charged with.
Oh, yeah. No. No, absolutely not. But also, you know, and also kudos to the bus driver to being like, okay, this is legit. I better look into it. Like,
yeah, for sure.
She saw something and she said something. Like, good for her.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Anyways, my laptop is dying. I'm just letting you guys know if I disappear.
Okay. I just have one more I wanted to read. It's family accused of selling bleach as COVID cure through church.
All right.
Anyone want to guess where this story is based out of?
Please tell Florida. Me Florida.
Ding, ding, ding.
I was going to say, watch it be Oklahoma.
So, a family accused of selling a toxic industrial bleach as a coronavirus cure through their Florida-based church, of course, has been indicted on federal charges in the U.S. A federal grand jury in Miami returned an indictment charging Mark Greenon, 62, and his sons, Jonathan, Jordan, and Joseph. Very creative there, sir. With one count each of conspiracy to commit fraud and two counts each of criminal contempt, according to the court records, they face possible life sentences if convicted. Mark Greenon is the Archbishop of the Genesis 2 Church of Healing and Health, based in Bradenton, Florida. The church sells chlorine dioxide as a, quote, miracle mineral solution. The Greenons claim that the solution can cure a vast variety of illnesses ranging from cancer to autism to malaria to COVID.
Yeah, it's because they give them bleach and they die.
And a federal judge...
Now I know why I'm so healthy.
A Miami judge, federal judge, ordered them last April to stop selling the substance, but they ignored him, so now they're arrested. I don't know why they let it go on another year. That's a little outrageous.
Because it's Florida.
Year, holy crap.
That's a little...
some of the dummies of the world. Sorry, that's not funny.
To everyone out there who thought vaccines were giving your kids autism, just go ahead and give them some bleach, apparently. Don't do that.
Yep,
don't do that.
Bleach will cure it. Mm-hmm. Mm.
I once talked to a person, and they shall not be named, and they drank bleach and water to pee clean for a test.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Then you looked at them and you're like, oh, that explains a lot.
You need more than bleach.
So, you guys want to hear something funny? You know how I just talked about...
Gonna die?
I'm sorry, were you done with your story? I'm going to say it real quick. So, April 25th, 2018, you know how I said I obey the law and all this good stuff? I got a ticket in Texas
for
speeding in a construction area.
Okay.
So I only obey the law sometimes, apparently.
You're a bad person. Bad.
I know.
That's so random.
I know. Well, it just popped up on my Snapchat and I was like, aw.
Memories.
I was in the Hale Center. Yeah, I was in Hale Center, Texas, wherever that is.
No idea.
I will leave us with "We Are the Awkward Mister."
Bye.
Bye.